What up?
What's up, man?
Dude, it feels like it's been a minute.
I mean, if a minute is like weeks, then yeah. Just depends. I mean, time's a construct, right?
What is time?
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I know a guy named Time.
I do too. MC Time.
That's right.
Yeah, dude. What's up?
Man, nothing in comparison to you. I mean,
well, first of all, there's this.
Is that a tribute with Mikey?
No, it's just what I had in my fridge, easily accessible. I wasn't in the mood to make something.
Putting two ingredients together is far too risky.
It's time consuming, man. I just want to.
It is.
Just, how's the song go? Tap the bottle and twist the cap.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, what are you drinking on?
Dude, Seagram 7 and nice. Some of my mother-in-law's fucking soda.
Okay, cool.
No, what is it? What the fuck is it? It's a ginger ale.
I was like,
I don't know why I can't think of ginger ale.
Well, we
it's
got
been a
there.
While
we
since I've there. Had ginger ale.
Yeah, okay, got it. Yeah, that's a good mix though. Well, here, salute or cheers or
salute. Time.
Come on, man.
You know what's weird? As an adult, I now understand how to mix a drink. Whereas, like as a kid, I just put alcohol in a cup and then like some cubes and some mixer. Now I can actually mix it to where I can have a couple drinks, and not just one.
Wow! Yeah, totally. I'm not here for flavor. I'm just here to get drunk.
And for the fans.
I'm like Farva. Just give me two of whatever's free.
Why was I thinking of Brett Favre?
I don't know.
But I picture he's got the same. Especially right now.
Oh, do you see all that shit about him having like MS or something? Like he came out and was like, he got conned out of some money for like some charity trying to discover a cure for something because he's got it. I forget what it is. And then... I guess like the federal government, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it all goes back to like those COVID like loans and shit. Like he signed for a bunch of them and then he got caught up in some like fundraising with like government and misappropriating their funds.
Well, I think he, so the dude who was running the organization was granted like TANF funds. I don't know if you know TANF, temporary assistance for needy families. So it's like cash aid. And so they gave him like a whole bunch of money instead of it going there to families who actually need it to develop this cure for whatever the issue was. And then Favre had it too, or does have it. So I think he put in like $2 million of his own money. And then it turned out that that dude who was receiving all the money, he just used it all to pay gambling debts. So,
I mean, how else are you going to play gambling debts? Did you ever see that movie
with your legs? If movies have taught me anything, it's with your legs.
That's true. Good answer. Or you could go ahead and do some fundraising and try to go ahead and cure the reason why Brett Favre would send dick pics.
That's a lot of brownies and lemonade, bro.
That's a lot of dick pics.
That's true.
In his jorts.
Speaking of sports, man, Yankees Dodgers game one. Tied, bottom of the ninth, 2-2. I know most people listen to this probably don't care, but we're in California, so suck
well,
it.
Some of us are.
Well, you're more Californian than anything, so shut up.
Word. Especially Dodgers.
I was going to say.
There's not a lot of like sports that I'm like super diehard with, but the Dodgers are the Dodgers.
Yeah. You're more Californian than you are New York, so there you go.
Facts.
Yeah.
Facts.
So what's up, dude?
Man, I finally got caught up on the whole Alien series.
Nice.
Romulus, Covenant, nice. Prometheus.
Yep.
That was a fun little watch. That was actually really really fun watch. I didn't, for a minute, I was like, oh, I'm going to dip out on this and, like, you know, focus on other things. I have pressing priorities. Nice. But I said, no, I'm going to fuck those priorities. And I'm going to stick with the goddamn alien catch-up. And I'm glad I did.
Give me my xenomorphs.
Oh, bro. It was more like the fucking AI, the androids. Oh, okay. That was what was badass. Yeah.
Okay, so you went through the entire series, right? Mm-hmm. In any particular order or order of release?
Release order.
Okay.
Release order. I know we had talked about doing it based on the like where it fits in the storyline
chronologically.
But to me it just made sense because I hadn't seen the last three, so it gave me a chance to kind of like work my way into.
Now when you say last three, are you talking, so you're working backwards, that would be Romulus,
Covenant,
and then
Prometheus.
Dude, Prometheus is so good.
All three of them are really so good.
I don't remember Covenant. I seen it once in the theaters. Me and Jack went to go see it. But we did watch. What did we watch? Covenant. Pearl and I watched Covenant before we went to go see Romulus. And that was a good reminder. And like we had just seen the first one, Alien, like maybe like 2 weeks before that. So it was still fresh in our minds. Yeah. So was there anyone that stuck out for you?
You know, I mean, Romulus was fantastic. Like, it really was a great movie. It tied in so many effects. Like, it felt like a passion project.
Yeah.
But Covenant was a surprise. That little twist of, like, the alien, the whatever his name was, David, the AI,
yeah,
like, still being alive and then, like, meeting each other and then replacing him. Like, oh, dude, it was good.
Oh,
it was nice,
you know,
and twisty.
What? I misspoke. Prometheus is the one that we watched.
Yeah, I
not Covenant.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, bro! Like, I actually was like, "Covenant's not going to be that good." We were like, I was a couple minutes in, and I was like, "Okay, this feels humdrum." And then like the twist comes in, and I'm like, "Oh shit! Like, this is good."
Yeah.
This is real good. Plus the way that like the spores infected through like the ear and like, oh,
yeah,
that's great.
Okay, so let's talk about Romulus for a second, even though that's not why we're here. But that movie is directed by, I don't know if you say it, Fede or Fede, yeah, Fede Alvarez, who also directed the Evil Dead remake, who did Don't Breathe.
Hence the shirt.
Dude, give him all the money is what I'm saying, right?
So you'd brought him up a couple episodes ago when you asked me if I'd got caught back up, and I was like, nah, I haven't got there yet. And so like I was like, you know what, I need to prioritize that because it is a series I enjoy. And then I went back to look up Fede and like learn more about him. He's the dude who like years ago had released that short in Argentina of all the alien attack that hit Earth. I don't know if you remember it, but it was like, it was like 2015 and like it blew everyone's fucking mind because it was like the first time you'd ever seen like AI or not AI, but special effects that looked so raw. It looked like there was a legit alien attack in Argentina. And like it impacted me because I was like, holy shit, this nobody is doing this type of work.
Yeah.
That means that it was available for everybody. And like to see his evolution to where he's at now that's impressive.
Yeah. You know who's like that for me? Dude, so Matt and I went and watched the movie fucking years ago, dude. Actually, I can tell you when. Give me a second. 2010, okay. Matt and I went to the movies and we watched a film called Beyond the Black Rainbow. Familiar?
No, sir.
It's directed by this guy named Panos Cosmatos, who also directed Mandy. Mm. No? Mandy with Nicolas Cage. It was pretty big when it came out a couple years ago. I think it was like 2018.
Yeah, I may have missed it.
So, until Mandy, no one knew who Cosmos was, right? He did some like PA work on Tombstone, I believe. And I also think that that's because his dad was in the same line of business. So, like, he got to be on the set a lot with his dad.
Word.
But his first feature is Beyond the Black Rainbow. And that is a sci-fi headfuck if I've ever seen one. I immediately after I after we watched it, I immediately bought it as soon as it came out on Blu-ray. Actually, I'm lying. I don't think we saw it in the theaters. I think what happened was I just fucking bought it because I saw the trailer for it and I bought it. And then Matt and I watched it. And then I think it was in theaters and then we went to go see it or something like that. But nonetheless, like, I was all about it. And then Mandy came out and now everybody's like, oh, Panos Cosmatos. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, he's good, dude. He doesn't do a lot of stuff, but he's fucking great. And there are not a lot of directors where I'm like, just give them all the money. But Panos is one of them. Fede Alvarez is another.
Word. Yeah. All right. I'm going to have to get caught up on those then.
Yeah. Beyond the Black Rainbow is great, man. And Mandy's fucking good too. Nicolas Cage, dude. He's making a comeback. The resurgence.
It's just funny the way he's Nicolas Cage, dude. It's like how can you go wrong? I mean, you got like a 60% chance you probably are going to go wrong, but the 40% is going to be locked in.
Just don't watch Ghost Rider and I think you'll be fine.
Because that's the one movie out of all his that, like, don't watch that one.
I have not seen it, but I've been told I don't need to. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're not running through the superhero universes at the moment, so you'll be all right.
Dude, come on. It's Nicolas Cage. He's great, dude. I can't help but think about Kick-Ass every time I think about Nicolas Cage.
Okay, like...
And that scene where, like, he's all beat up and tied up in the chair and he's, like, yelling instructions to Hit Girl.
Yeah.
And the way he yells them in that cadence. Dude, that's so good, man.
I mean... He was Cyrus the Virus on fucking Con Air. Like, don't get me wrong. I love me some Nick Cage, but like to say that you can't go wrong, he's taking me down a couple paths.
No, wasn't that? Well, yes, I won't deny that part. But no, I thought that was John Malkovich was Cyrus the Virus. No,
it probably was. To be honest, it probably was. I just remember the name. The movie.
Good call. Yeah. dude, I can go on forever. That's not why we're here.
He directed one movie, and now I need to find out what movie did he direct.
Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, only one. It's like Stephen King.
Oh, what? I don't know.
What did he direct? Oh, I'm sorry. I'll find that out later.
Sonny. Movie in 2002.
Interested. Sonny.
Starring James Franco.
In his last role before he was canceled.
Oh, Harry Dean Stanton is in it. That guy's not aged well.
Oh, no.
Whatevs.
Yeah.
So.
It is not why we're here. I mean, this is a great walk down memory lane, but.
Happy Frights Film Festival, man.
What the fuck? You fucking put on an entire goddamn film festival?
Dude. Yes. Well, not just me, right? Shout out to Sean Heights with Happy Fright Films. And then shout out to Sean McCullough. Oh, shit. I'm forgetting his name. McCauley? McCullough. Sean McCauley. My bad, Sean. He doesn't listen. Who owns the theater here in Fillmore. So all three of us and Danny, I don't know Danny's last name, but Danny was kind of a mid game add-on who helped us procure or kind of get in line with a lot of vendors. He's a vendor himself. He does a retro like video game pop-up. So he's got a bunch of emulators and he'll set up some screens and he's got like, not keyboards. What the fuck am I thinking of? Like joysticks and buttons. What the fuck, dude? Anyways,
controllers?
Whatever.
Controllers?
I guess, but they're like you know, when you go play cabinet games, is you know, there's the joystick and there's the buttons. I don't know what you fucking call it. I'm drunk. But he's got a bunch of those set up. So like a bunch of people were coming in playing video games. And then he got the mechanical bull. And we had a couple other vendors. Scream Queen Club was there. That's Jane. That's Dirty Joe's wife. She had some cool shit. I actually bought a shirt from her. That was cool. Ambi Scissorhands. This girl Amber. Shout out to Ambi Scissorhands. They do like horror themed blankets. And I got a Michael Myers one from her for Perla. So that was dope. So yeah, man, it was just, I know I'm all over the place, but yeah, it was great.
With the whole scope of, well, first of all, how did the whole film fest really start?
Look at you interviewing me.
I figured that that's the best way to go ahead and go about this, right?
So yeah, so Sean, the theater owner, I've known him for a little while because once I found out that someone bought it, I looked into who bought it and then reached out, and he reached back out, surprisingly. And we talked for a while, and we're both horror fans. And he was like, I would love to do some horror stuff here at the theater. Cool. And then I saw him here and there, you know, we just kind of keep in touch here and there. Pearl and I'd go to a couple events there. They've done mostly like Hispanic themed events. So mariachis, Latin based comedians, stuff like that, because Fillmore is like 75% Spanish speaking. So if you're going to, you know, want to put butts in the seat, like you got to kind of pander. So, but with, you know, Halloween on the horizon, he hit me up in like late August, maybe early September, and was like, hey, can you help me put something on? And Pearl and I went over there and we talked about it, and he goes, I want to do this, but I have zero bandwidth to do it. So like, I need you to kind of do it all if you're going to want to do it. I'm like, okay. So originally we talked about maybe like something every weekend or maybe just like one day. I wasn't really sure how we were going to do it. And then a couple days later, Sean Heights hits me up and he's like, hey, thinking about putting on a film festival for Halloween. Like, would you be interested in helping me set it up? And I'm like, funny you should ask, because I got a theater that wants to do the same thing. So I've got a venue. You've got an idea. Let's put the two together. So the three of us met at the theater. Sean H. dug it, and he shot some promos there and kind of got all on the same page. And then, yeah, it just started going from there. We call it the Happy Fright Film Festival. We opened it up on Film Freeway for people to submit their films, which was cool. All in all, we got like 52, 53 submissions.
Wow.
So that was super cool. Fantastic. Yeah, we ended up showing 19 movies in total.
Does that including Friday nights showing?
No. Well? So Friday night 20. Was 20. Yeah. So we made it over 2 days. October 18th, Friday, October 18th, we showed that 16 millimeter print of Night of the Living Dead. And we sold a little over 100 tickets for that. So that was nice. That was cool. I'm not really sure what the total ticket count was for Saturday, but we had people coming and going all day. So Night of the Living Dead was dope. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So we put it together. Okay, we got a name for it. We got dates for it. It's open up on Film Freeway. We start promoting it. And then we need vendors, right? Because there's a building next door. It's an empty room. We want to fill it, get some vendors out. It'll bring more people out. I reach out to a couple people. Sean H ends up hitting up Danny, who is a vendor, and he starts getting a few people under the belt as well. And so now we're kind of off and running with vendors. Pouring a bunch of money on advertising. So most of the money, all of the money I spent was spent on the huge banner that went over the main street by the theater. Which was great because talking to people on Friday night, they're like, oh, I saw the banner. It's like, oh, fuck yeah, good. I'm glad it worked. Some people were like, oh, I saw the flyers around town, the posters, which is great because I paid for a lot of money to have those printed. And some people were like, oh, I saw it on Instagram. And I was like, great, because I paid for ads on Instagram. So glad to know that the money that I spent went to the right places. Like, it was being received. Yeah, and then it was a lot of work putting the schedule together because we got so many submissions and we got so many good projects that we were trying to fit in as much as we could. So originally we were just going to do 12 to 10 on Saturday, and then it ended up going 11 to like almost midnight. And we had a live band, we had stand-up comedy, we did more than one Q&A, which was unscheduled. We were just supposed to do one Q&A panel. But we did a couple. I ended up like emceeing the rest of the show like towards the end of the night. That was weird how that happened, but it was cool. But yeah, Friday night rolled around. We showed Night of the Living Dead. Before that, there was a showing of a Three Stooges episode, which was dope. Yeah, that was really dope. It was like a Halloween kind of horror themed one. Saw some trailers, right? So it was so funny because I took Perla's brother, and then Raymond and Nicole met us, and we went to that second showing of Maniac with William Lustig. Mm-hmm. And I got my picture printed of me and him, and he signed it. So I'm stoked to fucking hang that. And some of the trailers that they showed before Maniac were the same trailers we saw before we saw Night of the Living Dead. So that was kind of cool.
Nice. Yeah, very current. Very current.
Yeah. So yeah, Friday was a hit, man. We did really well on Friday, and then came back Saturday to do it all over again. And it was busy the whole time. I got settled in, set up the podcast area, I brought my TV from my garage, and I was playing Nightmare on Elm Street 3 on a loop, because I was sitting at my booth was Roy Wagner, who was the director of photography for that movie, also for The Pest.
Such a great movie.
So we got to chat for a couple minutes, and then he invited Bill Frolick, who directed a movie called Return to Horror High. So he came out too. So it was nice, like being able to chop it up with some like industry professionals. And, you know, Roy had some opinions about, I don't know what it's called. Okay. You know what typecasting is, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what you call that when it's when like you're referring to like a DP, right? Because, you know, he gets known for fucking Yankees 3-2. He gets known a lot for Nightmare on Elm Street 3, but he's like, I've done so many other things. Like, why is this the one? And I'm like, dude, it's Freddy. Come on, man. Like, how are you gonna not, you know, be recognized for that?
It probably was under the conditions in which he had to make that movie, because all of those fucking movies had such a short turnaround time, like 6 to 8 weeks in shooting, 6 to 8 weeks in editing, and then boom, out. So like, he probably is like, thank God that's behind me. But I appreciate you guys liked it.
Totally. We talked about The Pest a little bit, because that's the low key sleeper. One of my favorites. Love that movie.
So is Jenny.
I know. Her and I were talking about it a little bit.
So jealous.
Yeah, and other people too on Instagram were like, is the he did The Pest, that's so dope, and they're like quoting different lines from that movie. It's so funny. So shortly after that, as we're just kind of getting our bearings, films are going, people are showing up, and it's cool because a lot of the locals walk that area on the weekend, because there's a lot of like restaurants there. People go for breakfast, they'll go for pan dulce, stuff like that.
It's in downtown.
Yeah.
It's your downtown area.
Yeah, 100%. So we got a lot of walk-ins to the vendor hall, and people are like, what is this? You know? So we tell them, and they're like, oh, shit. And they're calling other people like, hey, there's this thing going down, and blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, it's free to walk through here. If you want to pay for the film festival, you could do that. And they're like, oh, yeah, all right. Well, I'm going to go get some people. I'll be right back, and blah, blah. So that was cool, right? A lot of same-day exposure walk-ins, if you want to call them that. Shortly after we kind of get up and running, and some of the movies are playing, what am I thinking of? Sean Heights walks over to me in one of the movies. The first feature that we were going to show that day was a movie called Crust, written and directed by Sean Whalen. You know, Sean Whalen?
Not off the top of my head.
You ever seen The People Under the Stairs?
Of course.
He's the guy who plays Roach.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes.
So he did this movie called Crust. It's about a washed-up child actor who owns a laundromat and has to, like, deal with some of his past and trauma, and ends up, like, creating this sock monster that he names Crust. It was actually pretty good. No, it was good, dude. I really enjoyed it. And like the way they did the monster was fucking awesome.
Fuck yeah.
But it's, so it stars Sean Whalen. He's the star in it. Daniel Roebuck, Felissa Rose is in it.
Oh shit.
Alan Ruck. Do you know Alan Ruck?
Yeah, of course.
Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Or from, oh shit, he was just in that show. Succession.
Ooh, not familiar.
Dude, fucking great show.
Okay. Twister, gritty. But like, you know, it's fucking Cameron. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
Well, there's another person in it named Rebecca Kennedy. She plays the love interest. Her name is Neela. And Neela showed up. Rebecca Kennedy showed up for the screening. Now, Sean couldn't make it. Sean Whalen couldn't make it. But he did record like a video promo for us that we put on Instagram. So that was fucking cool. But Rebecca Kennedy showed up. And so Sean Heights was like, hey, Rebecca's here from Crust. So can you do a Q&A with her after the movie? And like, we are so pressed for time. Like every minute of the day is accounted for. And I was like, okay, we can do it. But like, if I give her 10 minutes, then we have to take like 10 minutes from the other Q&A later in the day. It's scheduled for 30. We'll have to do that one for 20 so we can make up the time here. And he was like, yeah, that's cool. Let's do it. So when the movie was over, I got to go upstate onto the stage and use the microphones and called her up to the stage. And there was a bunch of people in the crowd and we talked for 10 minutes and it was crazy. It was crazy because I had nothing but coffee. Cause I was up at 5:30 in the morning and I had nothing but coffee going through me. And this is like maybe like 1 o'clock ish and I haven't eaten yet. So it's nerves and it's anxiety and it's caffeine and it's sugar and it's just jitters, you know? And so I get through it. I get the feedback that it went really well. And then afterwards, she met me in the vendor hall and we kind of did like 10 minutes of the podcast. So, here, let me play that for you right now. Sitting here with the Rebecca Kennedy, just coming off of, the screening of Crust here at the Happy Frights Film Festival. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So tell us a little bit about Crust.
So Crust is basically about a guy, an ex-child actor who is now, you know, an adult 40 years later, and he's sad and depressed, and he works and owns a laundromat that he also lives in, and he gets bullied a lot, and he cries into a pair of socks, and, you know, and a pile of socks that he collects, you know, from the different machines, and one day when he cries into them, they become this sock monster called Crust that then avenges all of his enemies, and I play his love interest in the film.
Now, when you say a guy, who are we talking about?
A guy. Sean Whalen. You may know him from Twister, Never Been Kissed. What all? People Under the Stairs.
I think a lot of the fan base people who are listening to this will know him as Roach from
From People Under the Stairs, exactly. He co-wrote, directed, produced, and starred in it.
So did you know him before coming onto the project?
Yeah, so we had been, you know, acquaintance friends for a long time, for many years, and he was doing a table read back in 2016, and he asked me if I would, you know, come play a smaller part in the film, or read for, and I was like, yeah, absolutely, I was happy to be a part of it in any way. I just love the script, it's so fun and unique. And the night before, he called me and was like, you know, our actress that's playing Neela can't make it, can you step in and just read for her? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I had a great time doing that. I remember just telling Sean about how much I love the script and the part. And on that night, for whatever reason, there was just kind of this chemistry that happened. We both kind of relate to each other. We look a lot younger than we are. We, you know, often play kind of weird, strange characters. So we just kind of get each other in that, in terms. And then, you know, fast forward to December of 2022. And he called me up and he was like, we're making the film in May. Will you pay Neela? And I was like, yes.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. Love to. So it's just, it was an amazing experience. I feel so lucky to be a part of it.
Those are some of the best success stories sometimes, in which like you were slotted for something different and then, you know, the stars align and there you are in that lead role and then
yeah,
thing just takes off. I mean, It was a great film.
Thank you so much.
It's got everything about it, right? There's the horror element with the sock monster, which is, I'm curious, does anybody own the sock monster?
Sean has it. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. It should live with him. That was an awesome little sidekick for him.
Awesome. When we had a premiere in Maryland a few weeks ago, and he actually shipped it or took it on the plane with him to Maryland so that people could get photos with Crust. And that's, you know, that's been a big thing for people, really like doing that. So I'm sure he'll be going around to the different things with us.
So have you guys been touring it a lot?
A little bit. So we had the premiere in LA, and then we had a week-long theatrical run that played in different cities. And then we had the premiere in Maryland. And then this, so it comes out November 10th on VOD. So we're hoping to have some more events between now and then as well.
Cool. Now, we were just talking with Josh from Anchor Bay. Mm-hmm. They're the distributor of Crust.
Right.
You guys were talking about VOD and also some physical stuff mm-hmm. too, which is super awesome because physical seems to be kind of making a resurgence at the moment. So
yeah.
it's kind of timely. Is it just going to be like Blu-ray, DVD, or is there any plans for VHS? Because that seems to kind of be the hot ticket at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know. I know it'll be on DVD. I don't know about VHS. I can't speak for that. But I know it'll definitely be on Blu-ray and DVD December 12th, and people can already pre-order it as well.
Oh, that's super cool.
But you should mention to them about VHS. I didn't know people kind of still, I mean, I'm not well-versed in that world,
sure.
That's awesome that people are still watching that. So you might mention that to them.
Yeah, it's I liken it to like vinyl, where people are just starting to collect it, you know?
Oh, that's
and so
great.
VHS is kind of right in that same category.
I still have all my VHS tapes from my parents' house. Still have like my
really?
Titanic double VHS tapes.
I would hold on to those for a minute. Yeah, especially if you got any of them that are sealed, that's the ticket right there.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately they're open because I watched them back in the day. Not to give away myself, but.
As is most vinyl, so I think you'll be all right. So in the film, we also have Felissa Rose, who, mm-hmm. again, anybody listening to this is not unfamiliar with Felissa Rose. But we also have Alan Ruck, who played Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Mm-hmm. So what's it like working with some of those kind of established talent in that sense?
It was great. They were all super lovely, nice, welcoming, encouraging, supportive on set. It was just a really fun set, which was, you know, made the experience that much better. Felt like there was no ego. Nobody was there for themselves. Everybody was there to make the film better. Everybody was there to make just a great film, and that just, you know, made the experience that more fantastic. And working with both of them, so I didn't really get to work with Felissa, right, because I don't have any scenes directly with her, but I was on set with her a lot, and she was very kind and nice and just very, has a, you know, really bubbly personality and makes everything positive and nice. And then I got, you know, to work with Alan in one scene, and he's so nice. I didn't know him before that. I mean, Sean worked with him in Twister. And it's hard, you know, kind of coming in halfway through the shoot when everyone else kind of has a rapport. But Alan just fit right in. He came right in, did his job. He was great, really nice. You know, just is great in the film. And it just was really wonderful working with them.
That's awesome. So what is your experience with horror? Because I know you've got a few titles, a few credits on your mm-hmm. IMDb page that are horror related. But like, tell us a little bit more about your relationship with horror.
So I've loved horror since I was young. I watched my first horror film at 11. It was the It miniseries.
Okay, awesome.
I was at a birthday party, and for whatever reason, you know, we went to Blockbuster to rent a movie, and I don't know why her parents let us rent that, but they did. And then I scarred my friend for life, and the rest of her friends, I'm sure. But that's the moment I fell in love with horror. And I remember going home the next day, and I was convinced my parents to take us to Blockbuster to rent another movie, quote unquote movie. And that was the movie I wanted to rent, because
nice.
I was like, they were too busy screaming and you know, talking. And like, I wanted to, you know, be able to watch it. So I've loved horror forever. I never really thought about being in horror. That wasn't necessarily like a thought I had. When I started acting on in theater on the stage. And then when I transitioned into film and TV, that was kind of the first thing I booked. One of the first real films I booked was a film called House Hunting with Mark Singer and Art LaFleur. And then, you know, you kind of do one horror film, and then people are like, they, you know, start snowballing.
Hey, we like the way you die. Can you come do this?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, just like living and anything is like, yes, I live. So I've gotten to do, you know, quite a few horror films now and quite a few subgenres in horror, which I love. You know, I've gotten to the psychological, I've gotten to do the creature feature, I've gotten to do the slasher. I've got, you know, so it's fun to do horror, but then also kind of dive into the different kinds of horror. And I feel really lucky so far that the roles that I've gotten in horror have been really juicy and like really layered and complex and things I can really, you know, sink my teeth into as an actor. So that's been really fun.
That's awesome. Now, you talked about subgenre there with horror, right? You also mentioned that you started off as a stage actor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, is there a genre of film just in general or a genre of acting, I'll call it, that interests you the most?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, really, when I'm looking at scripts, it's the character. It's not even so much the genre. It is what kind of character is it? Who is she? Am I really going to be able to do something maybe that I haven't done before? Or is it something that I've wanted to do again? Or, you know, what kind of layers is there? Is there really meat to it? That's kind of what I'm looking for when I, you know, if I'm offered scripts. Sometimes when you audition, you take the job because it's a job. But when I'm looking at stuff that I'm offered, that's kind of what I am thinking about. And it doesn't matter necessarily the genre. I'm happy to do all kinds of genres. I love Crust because this is the first kind of horror comedy I've been a part of. And so that was really fun because I haven't gotten to show a lot of like comedy chops. And so that was a different thing. So that's, you know, kind of what I look for when I'm thinking about it. Looking at different parts.
So has there been anything in your portfolio so far that kind of checks all those boxes for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, a lot of the roles, I've gotten to kind of do something with them. You know, House Hunting, like I mentioned, my first kind of film was I played a girl that they found in the woods after these two families, you know, were looking at an open house and they couldn't leave. And they find me kind of in the woods, and I, at that point, I already have my tongue cut out. So that was a challenge.
Nice.
That was a challenge.
Something that you and Sean can relate on?
Yes, exactly. You know, that was a challenge in how do I communicate with what I want and what's happening without being able to speak. And then I did a film called Bastard, where that was my first kind of final girl moment, where I got to kind of start out as this, you know, kind of mousy wallflower girl who you think when you're watching the film, oh, she's going to die first for sure because she has like no strength. And then she, you know, ends up being the final girl and living and kind of getting that, you know, that moment where she gets to hit the villain with an axe,
nice.
You know. And then, of course, Crust has been really great because it's got comedy and heart and also some drama, and it's got a lot of, you know, Sean and I have some great scenes together where we get to just kind of sit and talk, which isn't oftentimes happens in a horror. And then I have a film out right now that just came out a few weeks ago called The Veil, where I play a young Amish woman. It's a horror thriller mystery that I end up on the doorstep of an ex-Catholic priest. And that was another kind of, it's a basically a two-person film. There's a few other characters, but it's basically just me and Sean O'Brien. And that was a really amazing experience and an incredible challenging role for an actor like me to be able to play.
I can imagine, because there are some films in which you only see two or three people for the entirety of the movie, right? The one that always comes to mind for me is Castaway, right?
Yeah.
You got someone like Tom Hanks on screen for 90% of the movie by himself, and you've got to have a certain kind of talent about yourself to be able to be on screen for that long and keep audiences interested.
Right.
So, I'm hope when does that one come out, The Veil?
So it's out now.
Okay.
It's out on VOD, like Amazon. You can rent it for a couple bucks. Apple TV, Google Play. I think it's even on Hoopla, which is like a library app. And then it'll be on like Tubi later in the month and other platforms.
That's
like that.
Super cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, anything else you want to kind of leave everybody with?
You know, I just hope you guys check out Crust when it comes out. It's funny.
I do recommend it.
It's got
great.
A heart. It's got a, you know, if you like Little Shop of Horrors at all, like it feels very much like that and Gremlins kind of combined. I think there's some fun twists and turns that we won't spoil with what happens to the different characters. But it's definitely a good time. It's a fun film to watch with your friends. Maybe have lots of drinks, some adult gummies, whatever your thing is, and, you know, just relax and watch a fun film.
You know, I do have one more question. I was curious because I wanted to ask while we were on stage, and Josh had brought it up kind of vaguely, but it's not a spoiler alert, but the movie is in black and white.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, what was the creative decision behind that?
So Sean can speak to that more, but some of his favorite films are in black and white. And I think for him, it kind of felt like a little bit of a Twilight Zone episode as well. Ed Wood is one of his favorite films. So I think it was kind of like someone mentioned it to him at some point and then kind of just stuck with him.
Sure.
And, you know, it's funny because we've watched part of the film in color. So I think they are going to release a color version. And it's not as... It doesn't pop as much.
It hits different, as
the
kids say?
Yeah, it hits different because the laundromat isn't that exciting. You know, it's not like they didn't build a set. You know, it's a laundromat that we rented out in Newhall up in Santa Clarita area.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, called the Lost Sock, of course.
Okay, that's awesome.
And so, you know, it's a kind of a rundown, bleak place, and which, you know, obviously works for the film, but making it black and white just makes it a little bit more beautiful and also kind of puts you in that, like, at some time in some place, like, kind of fantastical world where you're able to kind of accept that there's this sock monster eating and killing people.
Sure, yeah.
But also it looks cute and all these kind of characters are kind of wacky and you kind of just accept that.
Well, I enjoyed it because the premise of Vegas Winter, right? They get the name right? Okay. Or Paul or Sean, his character, is a, you know, former child star actor. So I think it gives it kind of like a nostalgic feel about it, right?
Yes.
It's someone who has to kind of deal with, you know, their past and just kind of the good old days and things like that.
Yeah. So, no, that's a great way.
That same feeling to it.
So. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it as well. It's, you know, and it's funny because so much... You know, obviously we filmed it last year and so much this year has come out in black and white. I mean, you look at Oppenheimer's in black and white and Ripley was in black and white. And there's so many other, not that, you know, comparing it to our film to those, but it was just interesting to see how many films are embracing kind of the black and white feel. And there is something like nostalgic and like old school and like really beautiful about it too. Yeah. So.
Well, the vibe that I got from it kind of off the beginning is Clerks, right?
Yeah.
Because Clerks is black and white.
Yeah.
It all takes place in the,
like one
in,
location.
In the store, right?
Uh-huh.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
So it was nice to kind of see that homage, as we'll call it, to movies like that. So,
yeah.
Fantastic.
And, you know, for filmmakers that are listening, it's like, you know, to be able to make a lower budget film in one location and have, you know, a kind of a group of actors, it's possible, you know, because right now it's... kind of that feels like the time for indie films, and it's like, but a lot of times it's like, well, I don't know how am I going to do this. Well, there are opportunities to make a film that's interesting and you basically are in one location.
Yeah,
you know, so
yeah, I was talking to somebody else who has a lot of dealings with a lot of the main studios in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and he was explaining to me that the sentiment kind of right now is that things are a little slow.
Yeah,
but I think that's attributed to the fact that it is so easy to just pick up your phone or, you know, a low budget camera and just go out there and start making your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we see that with a lot of different streaming apps like Hoopla and Tubi, you know, all the kind of smaller ones that are willing to put out the independent stuff
mm-hmm.
out there. And so it's just awesome to see everybody, their creativity, how they get... you know, how they get around obstacles like budget, you know, a lack of special effects department.
Mm-hmm.
So we do all practicals, like is with Crust, right? Yep. Everything is practical.
Everything
there.
Is practical.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, yeah, it's a great time, to your point, for filmmakers, because now anybody can do it and you're going to get a lot of good stuff out of it. So.
And I think the going back to the practical effects that so many films are doing makes such a difference.
100%.
You know,
I mean, I think about Star Wars all the time, right? Because most of that movie in the beginning, the very first one, a lot of the puppet, you know, was all practicals. And then you see the prequels and it's all special effects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just
yeah.
two completely different universes. So anytime, especially in horror, where we can see a return to practicals, for me, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
Because that means somebody had a lot of love, care for attention, an eye for detail that went into making sure that this looked as good as it can for us, the audience, to take it in.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, we saw, you know, the new Alien Romulus in the theaters, and so much of it is practical, and it makes such a difference.
Right.
I mean, and especially for the actors, too. Like, not that we can't, you know, act in a green screen with a tennis ball. Like, yes, you can. But when you have the thing on set, it just makes it that much better for us. You know, it just, and the audience, it just totally adds, you know, that's why the first Jurassic Park still holds up to this day.
Right.
Because of the practical dinosaurs they've built are just incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
100%. Well, I appreciate awesome. You taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Rebecca Kennedy, everybody. But yeah, she was cool as fuck to sit down and talk to. And, you know, looking forward to that movie coming out whenever it does, because I think people will get a kick out of it when they see it.
Fuck so yeah,
that was cool. And then just kind of going, running around back and forth, like trying to talk with people, meet with people, take pictures, interview people, watch movies all at the same time, because especially for Night of the Missing, because I was doing a Q&A panel for them. Night of the Missing is a Screambox / Bloody Disgusting release. It's on Screambox at the moment. I think it's also on Amazon Prime. But it's an anthology about this woman who walks into a police station and she starts telling the stories of these missing people to the sheriff. And then I don't want to ruin it for people, but the wraparound's pretty dope. Crazy plot twist at the end. And a bunch of people showed up for that one, which I wasn't sure. I knew people were coming out, but I wasn't sure how many people were coming out. So I tried to like prepare myself as much as possible because I hadn't seen the movie yet. Like I watched it, but I didn't watch it all. So on that day, like I was okay missing like the first 20 or 30 minutes, because I remember the beginning and I remember the end, but I didn't remember like the actual stories, if that makes sense. So I knew that two of the directors were coming. That's Matthew Hirsch and then Samuel Gonzalez Jr. were coming. Gigi Gustin was coming, so she was there. And then I think that's all I was prepared for. But then Meredith Thomas, who plays the sheriff, also showed up. So there was four of them. So it was Gigi, Meredith, Sam, and Matthew. Yeah. Bill Moseley's also in that movie. Jenna Connell, who was, Tara from Terrifier, is in that movie.
Stacked.
Dude, it was, yeah, it's a great movie, dude. And I think it's a great way to host an anthology, because a woman walks in, you got all these missing people posters up on the wall, and she's telling stories for each of them. Like, it's perfect, you know?
Hell yeah.
Did that. And then when that was over, I had no more Q&As for the day. So I was like, okay, now I'm going to go eat. And it was like 4 o'clock, and a bunch of us went to the bar across the street, got some food, got some drink, went back. Like, I didn't really like have enough time to hang out with like people in general, like just kind of little small pockets here and there. And then, yeah, just again, like I said, just some directors wanted to do intros to their movies. So that's where I found myself like emceeing. So I'd come down, you know, hey, let me bring on the director, and then give them like 2 minutes, and then, you know, kind of so on and so forth. So it just went like that all day. And then the band played at night. I missed the stand up comedy. I was bummed, but luckily I know. Well, I caught like the tail end of his set, and I caught the very beginning of Ryan's set, but I missed the sets in between. That was Hannah and Alex. But luckily I'd interviewed everybody except Poncho prior to that. So I got some good kind of virtual FaceTime with them, and I saw them there. So like hanging out with them was cool too. Yeah, man, I don't know. Just so much. Cannibal Comedian. We saw a different version of Cannibal Comedian. I've seen that movie like 5 or 6 times, but this version was different because it's the actual like release version. So that's getting ready to come out. And so it's like they did some different color grading. They added some music. And so it was a little bit different. It's got a darker tone to it, which I thoroughly enjoyed. So that was good. Sean's new film, Bellevue Bob. Yeah, dude. Creeping Death was dope. There was a lot of fan reaction to this one movie called Buzzkill, which is about a killer vibrator. Heavy Vinyl, which is created by a Fillmore local. We played Blood Gorge. We played the D Word. So shout out to Victor and to James. Yeah, dude, just there's so much. There's just way too much to talk about. But all in all, the band killed it at the end. They were fucking dope. Everybody had a great time talking with Sean and Sean afterwards. Everybody feels like it was a good success. We didn't have a ton of people at any one given time. It was just kind of a lot of like in and out. But yeah, man, good times.
Dude, I mean, I imagine that it was one of those you blinked and then the next day was like there. Like it just kind of went by.
100%. Considering I was there at like, I don't know, 9:30, and then we didn't leave until like midnight. It just went by like that, like in the blink of an eye.
What would you see as, now that you have a little bit more time, what do you see like that you would want to spend a little bit more time or focus on it for next year? Or is next year even a discussion?
So yeah, there's an appointment on Sunday for the four of us, me, Sean, Sean, and Danny, to talk about what year two looks like. If I'm not mistaken, it's already open on Film Festival it's already open on Film Freeway. So I think some people can already start submitting films to year two. But yeah, we have an appointment on Sunday to talk about what next year looks like. I think for me, it's more logistical. I learned a lot in like putting the event together. So maintaining parameters, I think, is an important piece, right? If we're going to say this is the time frame in which we're going to show movies, we need to stick to that. Because what we found was we started tripping over ourselves by adding in more things. And all of our print and all of our advertising said 12 to 10. But then we ended up going from 11 to like 11:30. And I mean, the overage is okay because you never know how long something's going to go and people are going to want to hang out. But when all the print and advertising says the event starts at 12, people are planning to be there at 12. They're making arrangements to be there at 12. And then we're going to start at 11. You're going to miss out on some shit. So sticking to parameters is good. Deadlines are good too. So I think if and when we do year two, I would like all the film selections to be done locked in at least a month in advance, because then it gives enough time for us and the filmmakers to promote that stuff and kind of get more people to come out. That's basically it. I mean, those are the things that I would do different. A lot of learning in between all of that stuff as far as like advertising and timeliness and organization, maintaining a ledger. Because the issue was that we have four of us all incurring different costs. Some of those are shared, some of those are known, and some of those are just, I'll just eat it and I'll just do it and I'll just pay for it. And so if you're expecting to make money out of something like this, then it's important to keep all of that stuff in line. Transparency 100% has to be there all the time, and tracking the money in and tracking the money out, and then being able to, you know, divvy up what's left over in the end, if anything. Because I think we just broke even,
if that, right?
Yeah, but also at the same time, we all came into it understanding that it was year one, and like it was more about exposure than anything else. Because that was in its own right a success, because talking with Sean M, the theater owner, he was telling me that, you know, a lot of people were expressing things to him like, I didn't even know this theater was here, right? Or I didn't even know Fillmore was a place, right?
Right.
And the feedback that we got from the vendors, from the filmmakers, like everybody who doesn't know what Fillmore is, all fell in love with Downtown Fillmore because, and everybody said the same thing, it's got that Hallmark movie kind of vibe where like small town, you know, rustic-ish country living. And everybody fucking loved it.
Beautiful. So beautiful place for a festival, right? Oh,
dude. It was the perfect spot. So this year, I don't know. Like I said, we're going to be talking about it. And we might be moving the vendors outside, opening up the space, maybe getting some food trucks, like maybe doing like a 3-day thing, like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I have some ideas for movies that I want to screen, plus invite talent. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's we haven't even started the planning phase yet, and it's already a lot.
Well, just think, you got 11 months more time to be able to put something together.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. But I guarantee it's going to go by super quick. So.
Yeah, without a doubt. So did you have any, I know we had an opportunity to talk about a lot of great talent and people that you've had an opportunity to catch up through the event. Was there anybody who you haven't mentioned or that you'd like to highlight, you know, your time with a little bit more?
Yeah, there was, we showed a short, called Liked. And it sucks because I didn't get a chance to see it, but it's directed.
Not the movie sucks. It's that it sucks you didn't get a chance to see it.
That is correct.
Okay,
yes,
okay, just very right.
Yes, thank you for making that clarification because I did get a lot of feedback that movie was awesome, but it was done by this girl named Kylie Roseanne, and she's got a large YouTube following, and so that kind of. I interviewed her. Here's what sucks. I interviewed her after her movie played, and I realized about halfway through the interview that the equipment didn't look like it was working the right way and made some adjustments. I apologize, Kylie. I only got about half of our interview. In case you don't hear it up front, this is a movie about an influencer who wants to kind of take her videos to the next level. So let me play that. Let me play that right now.
Been exposed as just truly horrible people. And I was like, oh, there's definitely something there. So like, let's maybe explore that inner world a little bit.
So you talked a little bit about, your history. Like you mentioned you've done stuff in the past, mm-hmm. right? So, what is your history with film leading up to Locked?
So I went to film school and graduated in 2021 and didn't do anything major there. So I've been doing YouTube for almost 5 years now. And I have one other independent short called Somnum that you can find on YouTube right now. So that was my first independent project, and Liked is only my second.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that available anywhere for people to watch?
Somnum is on YouTube. Liked is, just premiered here at Happy Frights. So that one won't be available until sometime next year.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's doing the festival circuit.
Got it. So you got a couple shorts under your belt. Is there a long-term goal?
The long-term goal, I'm getting a little bit into acting now. I have done creature acting in both of my shorts so far. I've done a little bit of creature acting for some other independent directors. Love acting, but my main thing is writing, directing, yeah. But I just love all of it. I love all the things of filmmaking.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I always like to ask when we meet new people, what was your introduction to horror?
Oh, my grandpa Jim was, I don't want to say a bad influence early on, but like he's the reason why I saw Jaws at the age of 6.
Nice.
And he was a man of taste. I grew up on Invasion of the Body Snatchers from the 50s. Respect to the 70s remake, but I love the original from the 50s. House of Wax, a lot of like 50s sci-fi horror, War of the Worlds, The Thing from Another World. So yeah, I really credit my grandpa Jim, and then my dad got me into like Jurassic Park and yeah, all those other kind of blockbuster classics.
So since then, is there a specific title that like holds near and dear in your heart?
I feel like this is such a basic answer, but I discovered the Scream franchise when I was 16. And then that was the first step beyond, like, I mean, I grew up loving Tim Burton. So Corpse Bride came out when I was like 5, and I still have the DVD from when I was 5. But then I discovered slashers at age 16, you know, and I found Scream on Netflix.
What is this?
Yeah. I watched the entire franchise in like 2 days and was like, oh my God, like this genre. And then I was like, wait, everything kind of clicked. I'm like, wait, I grew up on this. Like horror is everything to me.
So if Scream is the introduction to the slasher, mm-hmm. where do you go from there?
Oh God. I think, well, around that time when I was a teenager was when like Insidious and The Conjuring was super popular.
Okay.
So then I got super into like paranormal horror.
Sure.
And would just watch anything I could get my hands on, like whatever Netflix was streaming, or rental stores kind of started to unfortunately die out when I, like in my later teens.
Yeah.
So wasn't discovering too much that way. But yeah, so then it was like paranormal stuff, and then I went to film school and started my YouTube channel, and then that was when I discovered like the Halloween franchise, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, and like really dove into my horror education through my YouTube channel.
You said Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Did you meet Roy Wagner?
I haven't met him yet, no, but I hear he's here.
He is here. He is around. If I can catch him. I'll introduce you.
Okay. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what advice can you give for people who maybe are thinking about wanting to get into content creation, filmmaking?
Mm-hmm.
Because for some people, it can be perceived as a challenge. I was just talking with Rebecca from Crust a few mm-hmm. minutes ago, and we were talking about the easeability of just being able to pick up your phone and shoot something. So
mm-hmm.
I'm curious, like, what advice do you have for aspiring indie filmmakers?
I think that you just have to be personal, 'cause with content creation and being a YouTuber, it's really, really hard. It takes a lot of practice, but you just have to be yourself. And then that way people can latch on to you. And sometimes there is kind of that like parasocial element. So I feel like my experience is a little bit unique, where I was an internet personality first. And then I started to crowdfund. Like once I had kind of like my dedicated audience, then I was able to ask, hey, I want to like pursue bigger things. Can you please give me some money?
Sure.
You know? So that's like for sure a route that you can go, especially with how accessible social media is now. But for that, you have to have a really specific niche. And for me, I think I just started at a really, really good time. Like early 2020, as soon as the pandemic happened, like I busted my ass. Like I was just producing at least 3 videos a week, and just to like get myself out there. And as far as filmmaking, I kind of almost hate to give this advice because I hated hearing it in film school, but you have to make your own thing. Like nobody's gonna just like, if you graduate film school, nobody's just gonna come to you and be like, hey, you know?
Yeah, but here's, you graduated, you automatically get all these things.
Right. So you have to make your own thing. It's so annoying because you hear it so much, and I didn't like hearing it because I was like, why is this the only piece of advice that people have? And now I get it. If you want to make films, like you have to make them, and it's so hard, and you'll always be under budget if you're not a Nepo baby, you know, like you just gotta be really scrappy. But yeah, just make it personal, make it your own thing. And on some level, someone somewhere will connect with it, I guess.
Well, I think those two things kind of overlap. I don't know, me personally, I've seen a ton of like videos on YouTube from content creators who are like, I'm kind of quitting, not like quitting, but like tired of like feeding the monster that is the algorithm
mm-hmm.
and just making stuff that I want to make, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you do that, you're always going to find an audience. as opposed to like making an effort to appease masses, when, especially as an artist, again, this is my opinion, when you create art for you, it will be received by others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you start to, you know, enjoy what you do, and the following will come with it.
Yeah. And I'm totally so lucky that I'm just obsessed with horror movies to start with. So I'm obsessed with talking about them. And that was like kind of why I started my channels, because nobody in my life was obsessed enough
sure.
for me to like really ramble about too.
Yeah.
Forever. So
you gotta create your own audience in that sense. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm curious then, is there, as deep into the genre as you are, is there anything that you can recommend to us or people like, hey, here's like something that maybe is not well known, but you should definitely have eyes on?
Oh gosh. I feel like anything I recommend to you, you're going to be like, well, that's a classic, obviously, but my generation.
Did you just call me old?
Is no, I don't mean your age. I just mean that you have a horror podcast sure, and you're at a horror festival. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, you're going to be like, well, obviously, but my generation, I know this because I even was so unaware of so many of these kind of more culty classics. Like, I grew up being aware of Halloween, Friday the 13th, whatever, but still didn't know too much about it. So I would recommend The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man, which obviously is a, you know, it's a huge classic, but you'd be shocked. I mean, the comments I get on like TikTok and everything of like, oh, I didn't even know that there was a producer's cut of Halloween 6. What are you talking about? Like, you know what I mean? So that's one of my all-time favorites. I think it is such a perfect film and so important for anyone's, like, nice. Just film education in general. Nice. So, I don't know. Something a little more niche. Oh, okay. It is a 2010, I think, found footage dark comedy called Troll Hunter. It's a Norwegian film, and it's so funny. It's great.
Troll Hunter. Well, I'm glad we got it on record here, because I'm going to go back and look it up.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Uh-huh. Okay, cool. Where can people find you?
I'm Haunted Hippie on YouTube and on TikTok, and my Instagram is Haunted Hippie Horror. So, yeah, pretty much the same across all socials. Yeah.
All right. It was nice to meet you, Kylie Roseanne.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thanks for letting us show lights.
Yeah, oh, thank you for showing lights.
Of course. I can't wait for more people to see it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I say wherever you can find that, go and check it out. Luckily, the submissions on Film Freeware, it's still open, so I can go back in there and watch all that stuff. So, but I will say, by extension of your question there, there is a ton of stuff that didn't get selected that was like pretty dope. So I think it'd be a good pool of talent for us to like reach out to some of these filmmakers and say, hey, this is who we are. You know, sorry you didn't make it, but, you know, we watched it. You know, we want to talk with you, things like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. Being able to go ahead and connect, see some new work, and hopefully make some new friends and connections.
Yeah, dude.
I totally know what you mean about the equipment not being on and missing out on a piece of that. Like, yeah. I can't tell you how many times the batteries are dying on a P4 and you just got to deal with it. Sorry, Kylie.
I get it. Yeah.
And then with everything moving and going on the way it was, I'm sure that while you're in the moment, people are still chomping at the bit trying to get to you or trying to pull you in different directions too, which doesn't make it easier. But I'm not trying to make excuses, just understanding.
Yeah. It's a lot. And, you know, you and I talked on the side, and if there's a year two, which it looks like there is, hopefully you can come out for that and we can kind of divide and conquer and, you know, just kind of hit it a little bit harder.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'd love to be able to get involved. Just sucks having kids with birthdays around that time, you know? But it's cool because I got a lot of Halloween-themed birthdays coming up.
That's cool. There you go. Yeah, man. All right, dude. Year one was a success. Looking forward to year two. So we'll see how it goes. Hey, you know what? Shout out to everybody who supported on the side, right? Because I think there was a lot of people that although weren't in a lot of the posts, I did try to tag everybody as much as possible. So first and foremost, I'll just kind of go in order here. Dats from the Crypt allowed us to come on and kind of advertise on their show. So that was awesome of them. Did that with the Evil Deaths podcast. And then they actually donated a couple tickets to the show. So that was super cool too. VHS Doom did want to have us on the show, but we just couldn't get the timing right. So they donated a bunch of tickets as well. And they sent over a bunch of VHS, sealed VHS horror movie tapes to be given away alongside those tickets. So that we ran a couple of different contests on Instagram for that stuff. So that was super dope of them. Mikey the Bearded Villain, Dan Michael Jedrick, like always reposting our shit. Home of Horror, Bloody Disgusting, and just everybody in between, man. Like, it was so dope to see how supportive everybody was on this whole project. Even those who, like, you know, couldn't attend, you know, just reposting is, to me, like a huge fucking thing. And I don't have enough words to thank everybody I just mentioned as it relates to support. And that includes yourself, man. You know, being patient with time on the podcast and missing appointments and, you know, skipping episodes and doing what, you know, giving me the space to like go and figure all that shit out. So thank you.
Look, at the end of the day, what you accomplished and what was accomplished here was definitely a team effort. And without a doubt, it was successful, which is amazing.
Totally. Totally. So looking forward to year two, man.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
All right, brother. I'll see you on the next one.
All right, man.
See you later. Later, everybody.
Bye.